Prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Always correct, as long as you're not talking political correctness. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
McCown here, Reed right there. Wait a sec, you're casually attired today. Are you not working?
No, I'm just tired today. I haven't had a chance to change into my TV clothes yet.
Oh, all right. How'd last night go with all the mini updates?
It was great, man. We were on the air from about 9:45 until midnight, coming in and out of games and all over the place, 2.5-hour show and flying all over the place. It was a lot of fun. How did last night go for you watching the Habs game with your wife?
I had to leave. Periodically.
He went to the man cave?
There was a battle because I wanted to watch the baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
And she, of course, wanted to watch the Habs game.
Could you hear her when the Subban slash came down on the wrist of Mark Stone?
She was in the kitchen. I was in front of the television set, and I was watching. And, of course, anytime anything happened, she'd immediately run. The kitchen overlooks the family room, so she can sort of see that. She can see the TV, mm-hmm. but she ran over. What happened? What happened? What happened? And then she started speaking French to PK.
Right.
Who she knows, by the way.
Oh, she. What did you think of the slash?
Well, I don't know. I mean, why do that?
I don't think he intentionally. I think he.
Well,
was
yeah,
just,
he did.
He didn't set out to hurt him. He knew he was there.
He gave him a whack.
He was trying to let him know, don't get too close to our goalie. And if you see his head at the end, when you're trying to hurt a guy with a stick, you're going to watch that stick come down all the way through. PK swings a stick. He looks at it, but then he looks away. He didn't look. He hurt him. Does he deserve a suspension? Maybe, but I'm not saying he intentionally tried to break the guy's wrist.
Why did he get a game?
Well, because the rule is if you slash a guy and the guy is done and leaves the game, it's 5 minutes. So Stone headed off. So they said, okay, according to the rule book, PK has to get a 5-minute major.
Well, why did he get a game misconduct?
Why did he get? Because if you injure a guy with a slash and the guy has to leave and he's done,
you get a game misconduct.
Then you get 5 in a game. Yeah.
He came back 3 minutes later.
Well, that's why they had the shot of PK freaking out.
Well, why don't they undo the 10-game, the game misconduct?
I think the rule is once you change into your civvies, you're not.
What a stupid rule.
Put the gear back on. That's not the rule, but no.
It's a stupid game with a stupid rule.
Aren't you the guy that comes in here every day saying hockey players are dinosaurs, get this stupid stuff out of the game?
Well no,
shouldn't you applaud that?
Well, no.
So you'd rather see a guy slash a guy than drop the gloves with him?
Well, look, if somebody gives me a little tap, I'm going to go down like I'm shot, and I'm going to skate off the ice and go to the room.
That's what I do now. Yes, absolutely.
Well, are people in hockey so stupid they don't realize what they're setting up to happen?
Maybe, but the guy did break his wrist, so it wasn't just the love tap.
Well, whatever.
So I like Dave
Cameron's.
We're more
padding.
I like Dave Cameron's. And any hockey player knows if you want to get a guy, that's where you get him, right between the glove and the elbow pad. Although some guys wear little pads there. But Dave Cameron's comments were pretty good after the game. The league suspended him, or one of our guys goes out and gets a 5-minute slashing major. I like that. That was old school. To me, he may be more disciplined.
He's another dinosaur.
He's not a dinosaur.
He is so.
How is he a dinosaur?
Suck it up. It happens. It's hockey.
Well, and you know what? The thing is, they kind of do have to suck it up because they can't let your focus in your next game can't be the fact that PK Subban slashed one of our guys last.
It's not like this never happens. It happens a half dozen times a game. Guys give guys whacks.
Yeah, but they don't.
And most of the time, they're not called.
But they don't connect like that and break a guy's wrists half a dozen times a game. There'd be nobody left in the NHL. Would there?
Well, put wrist pads on. You got goaltenders that look like mountain men,
mm-hmm.
but forwards and defensemen don't wear wrist pads?
But they wear shoulder pads that could probably kill a man. Elbow pads that could kill a man.
Well,
but in a lot of cases, your wrists are exposed because of the shorter
gloves. Suck it up. Be a man.
Wear those old school coho gloves that went up to your elbow.
Be a man.
Wear the old school gloves. The coho ones, they go right up to your elbow.
It's ridiculous. That's what it is. Ridiculous.
See, I thought you'd be up in arms over this, saying, oh, this cheap shot goonery.
No, I don't care.
He didn't mean to break the guy's wrist.
Doesn't bother me one way or the
other. Letting him know he was there.
I was more interested in whether the Blue Jays were going to score two runs in every inning last night.
They were for a while.
Five straight innings. Scored two or more.
How tall is the wall at the Rogers Center? It's got to be 11 feet.
A million feet tall.
It's designed so you don't make catches like the one Kevin Pillar made.
Well, the only way you do it is if you put your foot
in the wall halfway up and climb it. See, that's why I love Oriole Park.
That's what he did.
I think every fence should be at the height of Oriole Park.
Show the catch. Watch this. If you haven't seen it, this is crazy. And up. Oh, my God, he got it. Watch this.
Look at this. He's hanging on that wall.
Oh.
It's one of the best catches I've ever seen.
It's 10 feet high? No, that's the best catch I've ever seen.
So, to me, Kevin Pillar can dunk a basketball. I'm pretty confident saying that. Like, he has no business getting up that high. Best part of the catch?
By the way.
Yes?
Number 42 had a great night last night.
He was a very complete player.
Number 42 scored, what was the final score, 11-7 or 11-6?
12-7.
No, it wasn't 12. Was it 12?
12-7.
12-7?
See, I know that.
Number 42 scored 19 runs.
He did.
Made great defensive plays.
He got out 27 times.
Got a bunch of hits. Well, got out 27 times. But...
Well, 24 times.
You see.
By the bottom of the ninth.
You see, I don't want anybody to think this is disrespecting Jackie Robinson. I love Jackie Robinson.
Who doesn't?
I love Jackie Robinson Day. I love that baseball honors this guy. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about Jackie Robinson I don't admire. But here's what I want baseball to do. If you're going to have a day where everybody's going to wear 42, at least put their names on the back of the jerseys.
Do not disagree with that.
Don't put Robinson on the back of the jersey. Well, they didn't have names on their jerseys back in Robinson's day, which is probably why they don't do it. But it's too confusing.
Best part about the Pillar catch was the call. Now, I don't know if we have the audio of this, but Pat Tabler goes into disbelief. And Pat breaks into an audience member from Maury Povich or Ricky Lake. And Pat's reaction is, oh, no, he didn't. Oh, no, he didn't. You know, I could just see the shake in Pat's finger looking at Buck. Oh, no, he didn't. It was such a great call because you can tell Pat just can't believe what he just saw. And it's just this great little.
It was off the charts.
Oh, no, he didn't. He did, Pat.
So I got into an argument with Zahn, which is not unusual.
Heard you call him a dinosaur.
Yeah, I did.
Aren't you older than Gregory?
Well, yeah, but I'm a contemporary in terms of my attitude.
Very progressive.
Yes.
Yes.
Kevin Pillar, not based on last night's catch, mm-hmm. but based on four or five that I can recall already mm-hmm. in a little more than a week, mm-hmm. like outstanding plays in defensively. And is he still hitting over 300?
Yes. He is.
No, not much over 300, but he's about. Look at that.
Look at that catch.
Watch this. Another one.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Look at this.
Oh, no, he didn't.
He did. He did all this. This is where he cut. And now his glove comes off. He has to catch the glove. And then this. Oh, my God.
I have some eavesdropping.
Who's the best defensive outfielder in that entire game right now? Kevin Pillar. It's not close. It's not a contest. Vote now, and Kevin Pillar wins. And so when Saunders comes back, who I'm sure is a very nice guy and a nice ball player.
Mm-hmm. Good Canadian boy.
They're going to put him in left field?
I wouldn't.
Thank you.
Do you know why?
No.
Because Kevin Pillar is helping you win. It's proven right now that he helps you win.
I'm going with, he's hitting and he's playing outrageous defense. There's nothing that Saunders can do that fans won't say, I'd rather have Pillar out there.
Until Pillar proves otherwise.
Correct. If he if he goes ice cold with the bat, if he drops a couple of fly balls, you know, okay. Now, Saunders, your chance. And I'm guessing what's going to happen here is Pillar will move to center field and Dalton Pompey will go to the bench.
But look at Pompey last night. Well, Jack's one out. Second deck.
I get it, but he's hitting a buck and a half or something.
But he's improving. He had a bunt. He had the most incredible bunt ever, Bob.
He
made a bunt stop on the field.
Anybody can do that.
No.
On that field?
No. Oh, what do you mean, on that field? Oh, right.
On that field?
Did you see his bunt? It looked like if I set a styrofoam ball on top of my head and it just sat there.
Well, you weren't there for opening day. You haven't seen the field.
No, I haven't walked on it yet, no. And
that, you'll freak out.
His bunt last, it literally stopped.
Well, of course it did.
Yeah.
I watched R.A. Dickey underhand throw a ball pretty hard from just outside the batting cage to shortstop. It didn't make the outfield. Yeah. It stopped. And Dickey's eyes got big as saucers. He went, whoa.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, Saunders is going to have to maybe wait a bit. Because to me, this team isn't in a position to go, well, you know, we signed you to be the guy and, you know, you were hurt, but you can come
back. You got hurt.
Too bad.
So sad. Grab a chair. Enjoy the action. Here. Oh, maybe we'll bring our next guest in for this because it's hockey stuff. Hello, Heels.
I was a terrible baseball player, too. Terrible.
Well, you weren't much of a hockey player either, I can tell you that.
No, I know. I could catch anything, but if I was to throw it to first base, I had to run it over there.
Oh, did you? No arm?
Yeah. No arm. Nothing. So, and I've passed that on to my kids, too. They're the exact same way.
Really, huh?
Yeah. However,
oh, well.
I succeeded in hockey. I fooled them for 16 years. It's pretty good.
Really good. Hey, where did
you
stand on?
You were a target.
Glenn, where did you stand on, you know, you go on the net, say the number one goalie's out, he's hurt, and you go on a hot streak. Do you deserve to keep that job, or does he deserve to come back and get
yes.
it?
At this time of year, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You're scraping for 16 wins. And if you can get the team closer to the prize, that's what the coach's responsibility
no.
is.
I think we've kind of seen that in Ottawa.
It does get complicated, though, with regards to certain individuals who maybe have won you a cup before, and you have a certain degree of loyalty, or a general manager who has a player who's signed to a long-term deal and walks in the office and says, hold on a minute here. We're committed to this guy, not that guy. So that conversation will happen.
Well, wait a second. So is Corey Crawford your goaltender for game two or not?
He is my goalie for game two.
Well, you just undid everything you just said.
Every situation has a different level of complication.
Well, no, it doesn't.
Yeah, look at Ottawa, though, right? And then you have the Rangers as well, where Talbot
the replacement
was
guy played his ass off, stopped 150 shots. Nothing got by him. You couldn't put a pee past him. But you're going to put Crawford in, who was a sieve.
He had a bad period.
Well, yeah, you think?
The road to the cup is not through Darling. It just isn't. He historically has played. There isn't another league for him to play in. He's played in every single league that is on this planet for a reason. So he's not getting you 16. He got you one, and maybe that's the best you get. You know, I recall a game we had one time in New York, and Nick Kiprios started the game.
Oh,
and in the first shift.
It wasn't a playoff game, was it?
No.
It couldn't have been. Yeah.
Yeah. In the corner. Went to the other corner. Absolutely devastated another player. Punched a guy in the face. Went to the front of the net. Puck came to him. He scored a goal. Never played another shift. And the question we had was, why would he not play another shift? I mean, that was about as good a shift as Kiprios has ever had. He said, oh, I ain't getting anything better at him than that. Done. So, that was it for him.
The psychology of hockey.
They have decisions.
I don't get it. Now, it was a few years ago. Okay, who was a goaltender the Montreal Canadiens had? It was Halak.
It came in for Price, yeah.
Came in for Price.
And they had to trade him.
Yeah, and then and stoned everybody.
2010, I think it was.
And then they traded him out.
They didn't stone everybody.
He turned out to be a pretty good move, but
Ovechkin in the first round.
Yeah.
And then he beat Crosby in the second round.
Yeah.
At the time, the two best players in the game. And that was the big decision to make, is who do you keep? Well, they made the right decision.
Yeah, sure, they did.
They've got the Hart Trophy winner in Price sitting there now playing for them. So
yeah, but and
that's again a hard decision to make, but they made the right one.
Well, yeah, but so now the kid comes in and replaces Crawford, and you know, like throws up a 42 save shutout or whatever the hell it was, but he's going back into his civvies or going to sit at the end of the bench and twiddle his thumbs while Crawford gets to play in game two. So if they pump five past Crawford in the first period, they're going to bring him off the bench again. And then who starts game three? Crawford. You hockey guys are so stubborn. You know that?
I know. Hey, you don't have to tell me that. I mean,
all right.
I know exactly what you're thinking, but, you know.
I know.
You got the best out of the kid that you could get. That's the best you're going to get. You're not getting better, but the road to the cup is through Crawford.
Well, it is if you keep putting them in there. but it might not be the road to the cup. It might be the road to the golf course. You might have to, you know, take a turn in that road. Now, let's get to some really interesting stuff. Our friends at, I want to be careful here. Is this Bodog stuff? At friends at Bodog have listed the odds for who will be the next full-time head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Want to guess at who the favorite is?
Mike Babcock.
Mike Babcock at 9-5.
Shocker.
Todd McClellan is at 9-4. Jeff Blashill is at 9-2.
Western Michigan guy.
Is that the LA guy?
Really has to be really smart to go to Western Michigan, like myself.
Nice.
Please. If you were really smart, you would have gone to Ohio State. At least you didn't go to Michigan.
It's a community college. I had enough credits out of high school to graduate, so.
Dan Bylsma is at 11-2. Doug Gilmore is at 6-1. Now, is there any chance that really happens?
No.
No.
This is probably the most important hire, as well as the general manager. These two hires are going to pretty much footprint Brendan Shanahan's career. If he hires the right general manager, they have 18 chances to make the team better in the next 2 years through the draft. And those names that are called at the podium will dictate the direction of this organization.
Sure, you're right.
The next most important hire is after you've drafted those 18 guys. Now you've got to develop them. Mm-hmm. Now you've got to make them real players. So drafting's good, and developing's probably even more important once you get them. And those two personnel decisions that Brendan has to make will be the most important two, and will pretty much footprint what we think of Brendan as an executive in hockey.
All right, so I have the odds on who will be the next full-time general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Take a shot at that one. You got the first one.
I would have no clue.
Mike Babcock again.
I would think that if you bring in Mike as a coach, he is going to want to have Patrick Waugh-like powers. He's going to want to have personnel decision powers. Sure. He's going to want to have the money. And you know, those two things, the Leafs, Brendan's going to have to relent on one. The money's easy. But he's going to set a new bar for coaches. And I think 29 other coaches are going to be applauding the fact that he set a new bar financially for what a coach should make.
Babcock is 2-1. Mike Fiuta is next. Ray Shiro, Peter Chiarelli, Doug Wilson, Paul Fenton, Sean Burke, who is interesting at 10-1. If Shanahan actually wants to be the president / general manager, and I'm not convinced he doesn't, Sean Burke would be an interesting choice, because I think Burke would be happier than most of the other guys, or more willing to take a subservient role, like be sort of the general manager, but allow Brendan to do most of the work.
And I would argue, Bob, that you probably want a guy who's done this before. You're rebuilding a team.
I do, always do.
And that's why I think like a guy like Paul Fenton, who when he first started, Anaheim was just an expansion team. And they built that up from scratch with Jack Ferrara. And then he went to Nashville, where they actually at one point had to dump salary and traded for a guy who was a heroin addict, Yiro Kiralati.
Yikes.
You know, they never took salary on. They had no money. They
had to
build that team from nothing.
Right.
And at one point this season, all six defensemen in their roster, he had drafted. That's a hard position to draft.
So you like you're a Fenton fan?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I think don't wing it here. Don't, you know, I'm going to go the Kyle Dubas way and come up with somebody that you've never heard of. I'm going to go with a guy who's done it before.
Glenn,
you're
going
to rebuild this thing from scratch. Paul, to me, is the guy that you're going to have.
Right.
I was going to say this, like, when you hear about a team gutting almost its entire scouting staff and its GM and its coach, this almost is like an expansion team building up, isn't it?
Probably even worse.
Yeah?
Alicia. Yeah, this is a group that the last game of the season, there were three players that were drafted that were playing on the ice in that particular night. So, not exactly a bountiful of drafted players. And over the past 10 years, you made the playoffs once.
Mm-hmm.
So where are these assets where you're drafting in the, you know, the bottom top 14 of the draft? You're not a bottom feeder. You're not Detroit. You haven't made the playoffs for 24 straight years. So yeah, there's a lot of work to do. And you know, if you go to the games, you watch the Marlies play, there's not a lot down there either.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think Nylander's coming up next year and he's the guy who's going to be the next up and comer, go to a Marlies game.
Yeah,
he's got a ways to go.
Forget
before
that.
He becomes a National Hockey League pro.
You hit on it earlier, Glenn, when you talked about developing these guys after you drafted. I mean, Edmonton Oilers are living proof that you can have a great pick year after year after year, and it's not really going to guarantee anything right off the bat. You do have to work with these guys. Who do you see the Leafs bringing on just to try and develop these guys? Is that the role of their head coach? Is that an organizational thing?
Well, I think they've got the right thing going on in the minors with Dineen as their head coach and Derek King as an assistant. That those are good hockey guys, mm-hmm. and they're good people, and they'll demand a lot from players. But your head guy in the National Hockey League, you know, he's the guy who really makes them pros. And you see the guys that are successful really find ways to do it, for sure. I'm doing this Montreal-Ottawa series, and you look at the Montreal Canadiens. Look at how many players were drafted in the fourth round, in the ninth round. You know, David Desharnais was never drafted. You've got to find ways to get players in other than your first pick. And that's been Edmonton's biggest downfall.
Yep.
Yeah, they've hit the mark with their first pick and Hopkins and Eberle and all these other guys. But look at rounds 2 through 7.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody.
There's some stat, we read it this year, Bob. The Oilers had, I think it was one player on their roster since 2007 that they drafted beyond the first round. So, yeah, the first round's easy. You know, it's I'm not saying it's easy, but it's kind of obvious. The real work comes
later. Well, especially if you're high in the first round.
Exactly.
You know, you don't even have to be a hockey guy. All you got to do is pick up any newspaper magazine, and they'll tell you who you're going to draft.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned 2007. So, you know, I look at the Montreal Canadiens that year in the draft. They got to the podium, and they picked 12th overall. They picked Ryan McDonagh, the captain of the New York Rangers. Mm-hmm. Not a bad pick.
Yeah.
Their second pick at the podium, they took Max Pacioretty, their top scorer, their best player.
Yike.
The third pick, they took P.K. Subban. The Leafs had yet to get to the podium, and the Montreal Canadiens
had three NHLers. Yeah.
Rebuilt their organization.
Yeah.
So those are three pretty good picks for Trevor Timmons right away. I think the Leafs that year took Dale Mitchell, and their best pick in the draft was Gunnarsson at 194th.
Wow.
You missed the mark, boys, on that draft in a huge way.
So you mentioned PK, and I want to ask you, because you were there. I don't know how much you saw from your that crappy seat they give you right on the ice, but you know, he takes a whack at a guy, and I don't know what the motivation was. And giving him 5 minutes seemed okay to me. Player was injured, but 5 minutes and a game misconduct. I mean, you can assault somebody on the ice and get a one-game suspension. I mean, what? There's something wrong here with, isn't there?
Well, I think the referees got it right on the ice in this sense. They watch a player lift the stick over his head, which is not a natural reaction for a slash, and baseball swing a metal stick at a player's hands. That player subsequently leaves immediately for surgery. He's off the ice in 3 seconds. Referee looks at it, assesses the fact that just a flagrant foul, a slash that shouldn't have happened, and a player that's injured. So it can only be 2, or if it's an injured player, it's 5. So they make the call and it's 5. Now he comes back and forth. I think he goes in and sees Dr. McCoy and they use the tricorder. He comes back in and forth 3, 4, 5 times. You really don't know how injured he is. You give the player that benefit of the doubt. So PK has his suspension. That's warranted enough, and that will be it. He will get no more. So I think the referees, you know, looking at what they saw at that moment, made the right call.
So Kenny was trying to say to me that if the injured player doesn't skate off the ice, correct me if I'm wrong.
No. In the rule, it said if he leaves the game, it has to be 5 minutes. It has to be 5 in a game in the rule book.
So they're making that assessment, literally.
Right. So they're seeing him go, and then they're going, okay, it's almost easy for them, Glenn, if they're going directly according to the rule book, right? They see him go, and it's okay, 5 in a game.
Yeah. Now, the player has what they call a microfracture, which if you look at the medical term for that, doesn't exist. That would be called a bone bruise. That's what the player has.
Yeah.
And he may not play next game. He may play next game, but there's no doubt that injury, you know, you watched him last night, even on the bench. He's drinking water out of his left hand.
I know.
He's not using that hand.
I'm not trying to condone what Subban did. It was stupid. And I'm the hanging judge. I just didn't understand why the game misconduct. Like, it wasn't a misconduct. It wasn't like he said something. It was clearly 5 minutes in a game. And if it's because the player left the ice and was deemed, you know, injured, I get that. But then when that player comes back on the ice, you can't undo. And he came back 3 minutes later. You can't undo what you did.
Absolutely right.
And here's and the problem with that, as you understand, and I think Kenny understood, is if you open that door, 1,000 horses will run out of it. So the next time somebody whacks somebody, I'm going down, and then I'm going to say, open the door, I'm going to the room. And then I'm going to sit there for about 2 minutes, and then I'm going to skate back out and continue playing. And they got to give them five in a game.
That is the integrity of the game that is kind of in peril here. Where you trust the players, you trust them to do what you believe is the right thing, and if they do dupe you as a referee, then, you know, and we've seen, there's no doubt that the referees have books on players. There's a reason that Kadri draws more penalties than anybody. Half of them he shouldn't draw. They shouldn't be called. But he's got that reputation now, and so when he does have a situation that probably shouldn't be called, he's not going to get that chance to have a do-over or have a mulligan. The referees are looking at him thinking, he's a phony, he's a faker, and I'm not calling it. So this situation, the referee has to trust the integrity of the game and trust Stone and say, yep, he was an injured player. And there's no doubt he's injured. But
I don't doubt that at all.
I think that the penalty and the game misconduct was the right call and enough of a punishment.
What did you think of Dave Cameron's comments post-game, Glenn? Did you think he may be findable? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if that does happen tomorrow night, then it's premeditated. Mm-hmm. You told your team to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You just told the world. So that's a rookie coach who got caught in the emotion of the moment, lost his first playoff game, and said something that Colin Campbell should fine him for, because that is not what you have happen in our game.
Couldn't agree more, because I've heard people defend what he said, and I don't understand that.
I
understand his reaction. I understand the emotion.
That's what he felt. I asked him. That's what he felt.
Yeah, I get that. But that if you're going to do that, you're going to get fined.
You can't say it.
If you threaten somebody, essentially, or promise, you know, if this happens, then this is what's going to happen. You can't say that. You can't do that.
But then again, I mean, from my point, as a reporter, I'm asking him. I want to know how he really feels, and he told us. But I'm not saying it's not finable, but
finable.
He gave us a good answer.
Well, it's a dumb answer.
The reality is it's an emotional moment. There's tons of media covering the series, and, you know, that's a slip-up. That's a moment that Al Arbor has never happened to him.
How was the chatter between the benches after that, Glenn? Did it pick up? Yeah.
Divorce papers are filed.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you tomorrow night everything's called. No matter what happens, there is going to be such a short leash on these players. But every single face-off, there was something that happened. A chop on the top of the foot, a headbutt at the draw. You know, I don't know if you just watched how many times players were thrown out of face-offs for absolute just vulgar different things, whether it's a butt end in the face. I had more problems with the butt end.
The Eller.
Yeah,
I'm surprised we're not talking about that too much today.
And these are two teams. Like, I don't look at the Montreal Canadiens and think that they're the big, tough Montreal Canadiens. Half of them can't get on rides at Disney. And yet, here they are, playoffs come, and all of a sudden they got Buster Douglas and George Foreman. This is great.
Did you learn any new words down there last night? You know, some
healing
you've been around,
all
you've been
the
around
words.
For a while, but at some point you're going to have to learn a new word or two that's going to come across.
No, I really think I can add to that episode of Hockey Wives, because I've learned a lot about some of their wives.
Oh, great.
So maybe I could be a commentator. it's passionate. It's what you expect. It's the first round of playoffs, and Dave Cameron said it best. He said, there's so many guys who have never played in the playoffs, and they'll come out on the ice like a bunch of banty roosters. And I thought to myself, what the hell's a banty rooster? I've never heard of that. But that's kind of the way the game went last night.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you're staying up late tonight. Get your cookies and milk out, because Winnipeg plays at Anaheim. And I don't think I'll be able to stay up and watch, because I'm old.
Come on, Bob.
I'm old. But I'm interested in this series, and I'm conflicted, because I love the two coaches. Both of them are friends. I admire both of them tremendously as coaches and as pals, and they both have really good hockey teams. And I was dreading the fact that they were going to play each other. But Winnipeg's playing Anaheim. Can you see Winnipeg winning this series?
Can you see Winnipeg making the playoffs?
No.
You see Winnipeg making the playoffs minus four defensemen?
No.
How about minus five defensemen?
No.
How about when they let a goal in from center ice?
No.
a minute left. What's he to make? They just have proved us wrong.
How about when Bufflin went out with five games left to go, right? It's booted out.
But they never make it now. What a selfish move that was for that kid, because they just want back-to-back shutouts. Wow, that's pretty good.
I get it.
So,
but, you know.
They believe. And you mentioned right off the bat, if you get a coach to make you believe in something. And the best example for me is 93 when we played the Pittsburgh Penguins, who were two-time Stanley Cup champs. Mario Lemieux, Yager, they had everybody.
Yep.
And Al Arbor sat in the middle of a room, and he looked at our team, and he asked each player if they could just tie one shift against Mario Lemieux. That's all. Not win, just tie. And he went around the room once, and then, okay, first period's over. He went around the room twice. Second period's over. And then he looked at us and said, we are one shift away, where all we have to do is win one shift against him, and we win the series. Mm-hmm. Game 7, David Volek, we won the series. Now, believable? Probably not, but we did. We believed that all we had to do was just tie. And I think Maurice will have kind of a similar message. We're the underdogs, and it's our time. Destiny.
I can't decide who to root for, but I'm really interested.
You're ball hockey, pal. You guys played for the Leafs side.
I know. I got to go that route, probably.
Glenn,
I got to root for Anaheim.
Glenn, at what point as an adult, when people ask you if you played hockey, do you have to stop talking about playing road hockey and ball hockey? You know?
Never.
We were the Ford and Flyers. I'm telling you, we were feared throughout the land. Nobody in Bay Ridges could beat us.
The land. That's a great nobody in the land.
Twitter didn't even exist, and we were on Twitter. We were the feared Ford and Flyers.
You guys had trolls before there was trolling.
Days. Never played us.
Yeah. I loved the days when the snow was high enough that you actually had boards.
Oh, man.
Body contact. That was the best.
No body contact.
Never played goal. I never played
you
goal.
You too, huh?
Stand it. And I still have probably one of my ball hockey sticks taped like Bobby Orr.
Oh, sweet.
I don't know why.
The one strip.
For ball hockey, but I did have the one strip. Yep.
See, I'd play goal. I'd play goal and I'd just leave the glove wide open, right? Then I just missed your dress up, the whole thing. You couldn't get the tennis ball by me. It was deadly.
So you say. There are no witnesses to this.
Call the Clark boys. Call my brother
all
Peter.
In New Brunswick.
I'm telling you, I was
not talking
like
to
a
them.
Young Mr. Dress-Up. Casey and Finnegan were there all the time.
You know, the difference between, say, Ken, you and me and Bobcat?
Yes.
Because we'd be playing ball hockey, having a good time.
Yeah.
Be car, you move the net, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. For Bobcat, it would be limo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Didn't shovel the driveway, just turn the underground heaters on.
Yeah, the cushy neighborhood. That's where he lived.
Took care of that.
I live 50 feet from a nuclear reactor.
And he had an endless supply of balls, eh? If they missed the net, just a new ball.
How was there snow near the nuclear reactor, I want to know? Because those things leak, I'm telling you. And you're evidence to prove it, Healy.
It's a wonderful life, isn't it? That'll be my next chapter of my book, I guess. Living by a nuclear reactor and why I only had to put a fence on three sides of my house.
So what game are you doing tonight?
I got nothing tonight.
Got another night off, huh?
Yeah.
You lazy hockey people.
Roger that. We have the game tomorrow night. So
I know.
We've got a cast of thousands to do these games, and we're going to top and tails cover this Ottawa-Montreal series, which has become ugly right away, which I like.
Oh, it became interesting in a big hurry. We got to get out of here. We've taken too much of your time, Mr. Healy. Thank you so much, as always, and we'll smell you next week.
Gentlemen, good stuff. Enjoy.
Thanks, Glenn.
Glenn Healy of the NHL on Sportsnet. Well, I guess I'm rooting for Anaheim, but I don't, you know.
I think, honestly, my finalist is Winnipeg and the New York Islanders. But I think Winnipeg is going to, I'm telling you.
Like you really think that?
They're going to be Canada's team. People are going to go nuts for the Jets.
Well, no, but you really think Winnipeg can get to the Stanley Cup final?
I think they can.
Wow.
I love Anaheim, but these are two gigantic
teams. Well, Calgary went out last night and won. I mean,
Calgary won.
You know.
Look at Pavlik. He's coming in hot.
Ottawa didn't get embarrassed. You know, maybe these bubbles won't burst.
But this is the thing about predicting.
Quick.
Anybody that says they can predict the Stanley Cup playoffs now, you're full of it. So I'm just throwing that out there. Because if it happens, I'm a genius.
Guy asked me in the elevator 30 minutes ago.
Yeah.
What do you like in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
I don't know.
That's what I said. I don't know. The break, and then primetime continues on the Sportsnet family of networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go! Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
18 before the hour. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. Bob McCown, Ken Reed in our Toronto studios. Masai Ujiri, the president of basketball ops and general manager of the Toronto Raptors, will join us in the next hour. Chris Knobloch, the Erie Otters head coach, will be with us. They've gone to round three in the OHL playoffs after sweeping London. That's ahead. First, our friend Sid Ziegler joins us from Outsports. Hello, Sid. How you been?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Good of you to join us, as always. There's a real fascinating story that you've written, and I'm reluctant to take too much of a lead into it. I'd rather let you tell it. But the one thing I want to say off the top is that we are, I think everybody now is well aware of the Indiana state law that essentially legalizes discrimination against LGBT people. And the response to it by a lot of businesses, and that response has been, nationwide, really. Before you get into your story, tell me what you sense the reaction has been against the state of Indiana. Are you pleased by it, or do you think there is some showmanship happening here?
Well, I think there's always a little of both. There's definitely some substance. And also a lot of corporations wanted to get on the quote right side of the issue.
Correct.
Very few corporations or sports entities want to be labeled discriminatory. And I think that the statements that people made and the steps they started to take pressured the governor of Indiana and the state legislature to act very quickly, take a lot of the teeth out of that law. And if it was not for the Final Four happening a week later and the NCAA and NBA and NASCAR and so many other sports organizations and corporations saying, you need to fix this right now, they wouldn't have done it. That law would still be on the books.
Agreed.
Hopefully they did.
There's a basis for a mentioning of the state of Indiana because your story essentially, I don't know whether it starts in Indiana, but a part of it is in that state. Tell the story. I mean, we only have a few minutes, but in a condensed fashion, tell us what's happening.
I was in Indianapolis for the Final Four. The You Can Play Project was working with a gay basketball coach named Anthony Nicodemo and the National Association of Basketball Coaches to host a discussion panel for coaches to hear about LGBT issues and how to help them on their teams and on their campuses. So I was in Indianapolis for the Final Four for that. And every night we would go out to a bar like you do at the Final Four.
Sure.
And people would recognize me or this gay basketball coach, Anthony Nicodemo, and they would kind of circle us and come up to us and say hello. Or they would message us on social media and we would meet up with them. And I really, as I listened to their stories, they were all gay, closeted college basketball coaches. As I listened to their stories, I realized that the situation that they are facing of both tacit and overt discrimination from their bosses and their institutions was far worse than I realized, having talked to so many people over so many years. And so I wanted to, they all talked about coming out of the closet and not wanting to be able to do that publicly. And so I decided we never write on Outsports about closeted athletes, but this was one, these were people, coaches, where I felt that the story was best told by talking to them anonymously, and the reaction's been pretty strong.
Sid, when I think of universities, and I went, you know, a couple decades ago, but it was an open place where people could be themselves and different lifestyles were almost encouraged. But what stood out to me in your article is this term. I kind of did a double take. Forced lifestyle contract that one of the coaches in your story was forced to sign. Can you just enlighten us on what that is? Because I'd never heard of it before.
There are a bunch of schools that are largely religious colleges, Christian colleges, that when you're hired, you have to sign a contract saying, among other things, you are against homosexuality. And if you obviously are gay or come out as gay, you will be fired. There was a very successful women's soccer coach at Belmont University in Tennessee. Her name was Lisa Howe, and a couple of years ago, she went to her administrators and told them that she was having a child and that she was doing it with her female partner, and they fired her for it because it went against this lifestyle contract she had had to sign. This coach had to sign the same thing.
Would those contracts be legally binding if you challenged that? Like, wouldn't that be overturned at some level?
In the United States, a lot of this is governed by state law. And because sexual orientation is not protected at the federal level, the federal courts really can't stop somebody from discriminating. It really is a state issue, which is why Indiana was able to create this law that opened the door to discrimination. So places like, particularly in the South, but many other states, they don't have sexual orientation or gendered identity protected against discrimination. And so, no, the courts really can't stop this from happening.
So we have a situation where we have, I don't know how many, I don't know that you know how many, but a reasonable number of college coaches who are gay, but even if they want to, they can't come out without the risk of losing their jobs and have essentially been forced contractually to agree that they will be fired if they come out of the closet.
That's correct, some of them, but whether they've signed a contract or not, the way college basketball works and the way recruiting works, and that's
right.
Mm-hmm. About recruiting are so powerful because the schools will use that against them. They don't want a gay head coach because they know that the other head coaches in the conference who are fighting for the same recruits will use that against them. You don't want to go to a gay team. Well, they don't have to be that overt about it. They can drop subtle hints. It happens in the women's game all the time. So whether they've signed a contract or not, their careers are it's disgusting, but their careers are injured by coming out of the closet. And frankly, the members of the NCAA, the corporations that are involved with the NCAA, are doing absolutely nothing about it.
And Sid, one of the coaches in your story who you called Jim, he thinks the solution is to have a Branch Rickey-type person, an AD or some leader to come out and really take things over in order for this to perhaps start at least to be cleaned up, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you look at what Branch Rickey did in 1947 with Major League Baseball. He was the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, and he said, I am going to integrate baseball. He went out and found Jackie Robinson. He signed Jackie Robinson, and he played Jackie Robinson. And what this guy and a couple other other people mentioned to me was that, it's going to take a Mike Krzyzewski or somebody at that level, a Jim Boeheim, well, maybe not now, but somebody at that level to say, I am doing this, and I'm going to be public about doing this, and we're going to do it very intentionally. That's what you're going to need.
It's more shocking news. There's never a day where you don't get shocked about something.
And to me, it's shocking because it's on, to me, like, you know, a college campus. That's when you think things are progressive, but I guess not.
It might be on campus, but in the boardrooms and in the sometimes the president's chair, it's an entirely different story. Thanks, Sid, as always, for taking time for us. We greatly appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, I hope.
You hit the nail on the head with that last comment.
Thanks, pal. Sid Ziegler is with OutSports. And when you think you've heard it all. So he knows of five, I think.
Well, and his five said they know of, you know, dozens of others, 50 others. You know, so
I'm sure there are many, many, many more.
Tons.
Head coaches, assistant coaches, whatever. Mm-hmm. Who fear they will lose their jobs and most likely will if they do nothing more than acknowledge that they are gay. No playoffs for the Leafs, but the Raptors are getting set to play. The general manager and president of the Raptors, Masai Ujiri, is next. This is Primetime.